following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. Here are your hosts, Olivia Reiner and Tom Silverstein. Welcome everyone to the Packers News JS Online Green 19 podcast alongside Tom Silverstein. I am Olivia Reiner. It is week 16. I cannot believe we have made it almost the entire way through the regular season. It is mind-blowing. However, before we start to get all sentimental, or at least I start to get sentimental, as I always do every week, let's get into some good stuff. We can start today with some injury updates, transaction updates, and then, of course, we will get into previewing this weekend's game, Sunday Night Football against the Tennessee Titans. Let's talk about a familiar face that welcomed himself back to practice this week. Center Corey Linsley, who is on injured reserve for the past 3 weeks, he returned to practice on Tuesday. The week has shifted up a day, so yeah. The Packers are taking Friday off for Christmas, and so that means that they practiced on Tuesday this week. So Corey Linsley back at practice. He had been on injured reserve with a sprained MCL in his left knee, and he has a big old brace on his leg. So Tom, what are the Packers looking for this week from Corey Linsley in practice to indicate that he is good to go for this weekend?
I think it's really they'll look and see whether he has the mobility. They'll probably, you know, look at certain plays where he's got to get out to the second level and block linebackers. Is he limping? Is he moving too slowly? Does he look a step behind? Is he maybe not able to anchor like he wants when he has to pass block? Those are the things they'll be looking at. But I kind of doubt that he would be in pads this week. I just, if he weren't going to play, he's just sort of the guy, kind of guy who, you know, I just think that if he can practice, he can play. That's the kind of guy he is. So I would expect him to start. And then, you know, then it comes down to, you know, he'll wear a brace, to protect the MCL, which is an injury that does not require surgery. It's the side of your knee. Usually you see guys get rolled up on, that's how they hurt it. And the brace protects the knee from going sideways. Now you're not quite as mobile with it on, but you know, they get him back and their offensive line is solid. Then they really have to decide, what do they do with Lucas Patrick, Rick Wagner? Which one of those guys gets to start?
And that was my next question for you. I'm curious. So if Corey Linsley does play on Sunday and presumably, you know, Elgton Jenkins would kick back over to left guard, then what? Do they keep Billy Turner at right guard? Do they move Billy Turner back to right tackle and move Lucas Patrick over to right guard? Or maybe there's a third option, but I would assume those are the two options for the Packers.
Yeah. So the one thing we know is that Elgton Jenkins will move to left guard. Then it's, do they go back to their original starting offensive line with Patrick at right guard and Turner at right tackle? You know, I thought that Turner was playing pretty well at right tackle. But, you know, Wagner has played pretty well too. And, you know, if you were really going to evaluate the 5-6 offensive linemen, you would probably put Lucas Patrick at number 6. So there's a chance they might just go with Turner at guard and Wagner at right tackle. I think it really just depends on how much shuffling they want to do. Originally, the big question to me would be, okay, is Billy Turner that much more valuable at right tackle than he is at right guard? That would be the question I'd be asking. And so that, I don't know the answer to that.
And maybe the question too is Lucas Patrick a liability after last week? The offensive line as a whole allowed 5 sacks, which is the highest that, you know, the most they've taken all season. And granted, it's not just the offensive line. I shouldn't say the offensive line allowed 5 sacks. The Packers offense allowed Aaron Rodgers to get sacked 5 times. And to give some credit to the Panthers defense as well. But I think Lucas Patrick was credited for allowing like 2 sacks. So he's not exactly coming off of his best game. So perhaps that will play a role into whether or not he starts on Sunday against the Titans. So something to keep in mind there as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, Lucas Patrick is allowed to have a bad game. And it came against the number 7 pick in the draft, who's going to be a really good player and is a bad matchup for Lucas Patrick. I mean, he's just a massive dude. I don't know whether you punish him for that by moving him out. But I do know that, you know, if you really like that combination of Turner and Wagner on that right side, then, you know, he might just have to be the odd man out. It really depends on how they, it also depends on the matchup this week. You know, who do they feel like matches up better against the Titans?
Well, as head coach Matt LaFleur always loves to say, the Packers will roll out their best starting 5 offensive linemen on Sunday.
Absolutely. We would never do that. Out the best 5.
Believe it or not, they will not be rolling out their worst starting 5 on the offensive line. I know that might come as a surprise. Anyway.
What? Come on, make it interesting.
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure that would go over real well. Anyway, moving on. So a couple other notable injuries. We'll start with running back Jamal Williams. He exited Saturday's game against the Panthers early with a quad injury. And he has not practiced all week. And by all week, I mean, Tuesday and Wednesday. We have yet to see Thursday practice at the time that this is being recorded. So presumably he could come back or not. And he could still, even without a full week of practice, Jamal Williams is a player that presumably doesn't need a full week of practice. He's a veteran. The Packers could, you know, if he's healthy enough, if he's good to go on Sunday, the Packers could have him active. However, there's a chance that he doesn't play. Certainly a big chance. Luckily for the Packers, they have the depth at running back in Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon. AJ Dillon is interesting because he is coming off of a one touch game against the Panthers in which he was able to pick up an 18-yard gain on the ground. And that was it. That was all we saw from AJ Dillon on Saturday night. If Jamal Williams doesn't play, Tom, how many more touches do you anticipate AJ Dillon getting on Sunday?
I think he's got to get 8 to 10. I'm assuming that Aaron Jones will get 15 to 20. And I think if they're having a good game offensively, AJ Dillon should get somewhere around 8 to 10. It may be just a good game for them to rest Jamal Williams and not take a chance, because he's performed well against the Bears. And maybe this is just a good chance to get AJ Dillon in a somewhat cold weather game and find out what he can do. So I kind of have a gut feeling that that's what they'll do. And then they got to give him a chance. They got to do it and do it early, because if you get in a tight game late, you're going to want Aaron Jones on the field every single snap. So give him a series or two in the first half.
And that was head coach. I don't know why I keep giving his title. I'm so used to doing the live streams, but that was Matt LaFleur's. That was his reasoning behind not taking Aaron Jones off the field and giving AJ Dillon more touches, especially in the second half there, was that the game got close. He didn't want to take his best running back out, which is fair. However, as a whole, the Packers backed off of the run game in the second half. I think Aaron Jones only had like 30 yards on the ground in the second half, which was the bulk of the Packers offense, to be fair, in the second half. So just something, again, to keep an eye on. Do they commit to the run game, not just early, but throughout the entire game, especially against a good team like the Titans? So that's that with the running back situation right now. And then quickly, a couple players still in concussion protocol, Jay Sternberger and Will Redmond. Sternberger is like a serious concern at this point. He's been in concussion protocol now for 2.5 weeks, almost 3 weeks. Not looking like he's going to play this week. I know we've talked about it on the podcast already, Tom, but especially someone with a concussion history. He was out. He spent some time out with the concussion last season in preseason after the Texans came to practice last season. So that's, we don't know what's going on with him, but
I wonder too if, you know, it's possible that the illness has kind of trumped the concussion, that you know, he's just listed as concussion because he hadn't played. And then now it's that he's sick. It's, there seems to be a little bit of illness going around on the team. Probably not, I mean, not COVID related, just right. usual December kind of
stuff. So. Yeah. So he's listed on the injury report with both the concussion and an illness of some sort, non-COVID-19 related. And then safety Will Rebbin also out with the concussion currently. So that's that. And then the only, I guess, notable signing of the week is the Packers picked up a practice squad kicker in JJ Molson, who I am absolutely, I'm so intrigued by this player.
You are obsessed with him. Yes.
If you know me.
It's history.
Yes. I'm a big hockey fan. I love hockey. And JJ Molson has some hockey ties. He's Canadian. He's from Montreal and he is related. His grandfather was the owner of the Montreal Canadiens in the late 60s and early 70s. A team that won several Stanley Cups. And then he also is the eighth generation descendant of, you know, John Molson, who founded Molson Brewery. So anyway, pretty cool backstory there. And now he's going to be the, you know, insurance for kicker Mason Crosby and punter JK Scott in an emergency situation. And it's insurance that they have heading into the playoffs. We know that they were working out players throughout the week during the season, kickers during the season, in case for whatever reason there was an emergency. Mason Crosby couldn't punt, Mason Crosby couldn't kick and JK Scott couldn't punt. And that way they had somebody already through the COVID protocol who they could sign, you know, on the Saturday before a game and had already, you know, is cleared and ready to go and not have to take up a roster spot. However, now they've got someone on the practice squad. They don't have to keep doing that every week. They've presumably found a guy that they really like.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we've been waiting for. I don't know. You know, I asked Sean Menenga about that because I didn't know whether they were just going to keep working guys out. And then when they got closer to the playoffs, just sign a guy based on all those tryouts, because, you know, at some point teams can sign free agents. Not at some point, once the regular season is over, if your season's over, you can sign guys to futures contracts. And so some of those kickers are going to get signed and this guy might've gotten signed. So you got to make a decision, I guess, at some point, or else you might get wind up, you know, having some really lousy kicker. And so this is probably the guy they figured was the best guy on the team. And, the best guy out on the street. And so he'll be their emergency kicker.
Yes. So to be clear, nothing is seriously wrong with Mason Crosby. I've seen the question, is this guy coming for Crosby's job? No, not necessarily. He's just there in case Crosby gets hurt, sick, injured, heading into the playoffs.
And, you know, he could be the future. It doesn't mean that it's going to be next year. You know, maybe he's the guy they keep around as on the practice squad. If he kicks really well in a preseason, assuming there is a preseason next year, chances are he won't be around, but you never know.
Oh man, I can't even think past next week, let alone what the heck's going to happen next season. Who knows where we're all going to be. But anyway, all right, so that's the injury transaction news of the week. Let's look ahead to this weekend against the Titans. So typically we would do a little flashback previously on Packers-Titans, but this is an uncommon opponent. The Packers have only played the Titans franchise, which would also encompass them being the former Houston Oilers 12 times in their histories.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm proud to say that I did cover a Packers Oilers game.
Wow.
1992 in the Astrodome. There you go. Bam. Drop the mic.
Wow. Look at this seasoned veteran. Do you have any memories from that game at all?
I do. Actually, it was a phenomenal game. They were really good, the Oilers that year. And Mike Holmgren, that was his first year, and he took the Packers in there, and they won. It was Favre's first year, and it was a really impressive win considering how good the Oilers were. And the Astrodome was just a phenomenal place. I mean, it's old, and you know, but it was, you know, it was once one of the eight wonders of the world, and it was huge for that time, and really a cool indoor stadium. So anyway, that's my memory. I remember it pretty vividly.
That's great. Well, the Oilers are no more, unless you're talking about the Edmonton Oilers. However, now they have become the Tennessee Titans. And the last time the Packers saw them was November 13th, 2016, a 47-25 loss for the Packers. Aaron Rodgers versus Marcus Mariota. It's not even worth talking about. There's only five players.
Too.
Do you really?
Oh my God, were they bad that day? Anyway, they couldn't stop a fly on that day.
Doesn't look like it. 47-25. Five players from the Packers are still on the current team. So the players that played in that game. So that's in the past. But what isn't really in the past is the connections that the current Packers have to the Titans in head coach Matt LaFleur and his history with the Titans. He was the offensive coordinator of the team in 2018. He left the same job with the Rams as offensive coordinator and was promoted essentially to call plays for the first time in his career with the Titans under head coach Mike Vrabel. And Vrabel was hired that same year. Marcus Mariota was the quarterback at the time, and the Titans finished with a 9-7 record in 2018. I think the offense was like at the bottom of the league. It was like the 25th ranked offense, 27th ranked offense, something like that. And now here LaFleur is, transformed the Packers for sure. And now, fun fact. So LaFleur was replaced by Arthur Smith. He was promoted to offensive coordinator when LaFleur left. And Smith's father, get this,
I heard this yesterday. First time a friend of mine told me about this yesterday. I had no idea. Go ahead.
Smith's father is the founder of FedEx. Yes, that FedEx. I don't know if there's any other FedEx, but geez. Wow, what a bloodline.
I know. So basically we have two of the richest not inheritors, what's the word that you would say?
Heirs.
Heirs. Yeah. Yes, thank you. A Molson on one side and a FedEx on the other.
Molson versus FedEx. What? The practice squad kicker versus an offensive coordinator. Yes, this is exactly the showdown that we've all been looking forward to.
Just to say, when John Robinson, the Titans GM, wants to sign somebody and he's a little low on cash, does he go to Arthur Smith and say, hey, can I get a loan to sign this guy? And now Mark Murphy can go to Molson and say, look, you know, we'll pay you back. We'll swap some Miller for some Molson.
I promise we won't cut you.
Yeah. Okay.
That's enough. Anyway. So we digress. So yes, Packers, Titans. Anyway, but to be fair, Smith, the Titans changed quite a bit when LaFleur left. So quarterback Ryan Tannehill is now at the helm of the Titans offense. And in 2019, Smith oversaw the highest scoring offense in 16 years, thanks to career seasons from Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, and Jonnu Smith. So things really ramped up when LaFleur left. And still, this offense is performing exceptionally. They have eclipsed the Packers in scoring. They're number one in points, number two in yards. Man, it's going to be a showdown of the highest powered offenses in the league, Tom, even though the Packers are coming off of a stinker, as Aaron Rodgers would call it, last week.
Yeah, you know, so Arthur Smith is kind of an interesting story. He worked his way up the ranks. He wasn't given, he wasn't awarded huge positions. He had to work his way up. And then he inherited LaFleur's talent that he had in 18. And what he did was keep some of that off offense because it fit the personnel they were doing. And from, you know, what it appears is that he's just done a really good job of playing to his personnel. And one of the criticisms LaFleur had when he was there was that he didn't use Derrick Henry enough. He didn't figure it out till the second half that this guy was the most dominating player, could be the most dominating player. And so he learned his lesson, and he uses Aaron Jones pretty proficiently. So, but yeah, they have a very, very good offense. And, you know, you figure they made Ryan Tannehill into, you know, a guy who lost his job in Miami, and now he's just a really efficient quarterback.
So let's start with Derrick Henry. So this offense, the run game is unbelievable. They're number two in attempts, number two in yards, number two in touchdowns, number three in yards per attempt. So a little slight drop off yard. They're averaging 5 yards per attempt, which is very good. Derrick Henry has 1,679 rushing yards this season. He could become the eighth player in NFL history to rush for 2,000 yards. Does that...
He gets my MVP vote.
It just doesn't even like coming out of my mouth. I'm like, I don't even believe that. It's unbelievable.
You know, all you have to do, and I'm not sure if LaFleur should hide this video or show it over and over again, but in that Detroit game, he threw a stiff arm on a guy on a Lions defensive back. And I think they're still peeling that guy off the ground because it was like a punch. It was like Mike Tyson, pow, you know, he just, I talked to Leroy Butler about it too. We were talking about it and he was telling me how you prevent that from happening. And I'm like, yeah, easier said than done. He's like, yeah, knock the arm down, then go low. And I'm like, have you seen Derrick Henry's arms? You know, this guy is.
It's a tree trunk.
This is going to be a fun game to watch.
Yeah, I mean, every week you log on to Twitter and you just see like a highlight reel from that weekend's game of, you know, embarrassing things that Derrick Henry did to the opposing defense. It's like you don't want to end up there, and somehow every single week somebody does. And like, I don't know who is it going to be from the Packers this weekend. It's almost inevitable. But he is what head coach or what LaFleur said. God, why do I keep wanting to ID him? You know who he is. LaFleur said that Derrick Henry runs violently and angry. I also run violently and angry, especially when I'm hungry, but probably not violently
You're
and
just
angry.
Not as fast as Derrick Henry. That's
and I'm not as big. Derrick Henry, 247 pounds, 6'3". He's like a whole offensive lineman on wheels. Ran a 4.54 40 at the combine. One of the words that we've been hearing to describe Derrick Henry throughout the week, well, I should say one of the phrases we've been hearing, and I generally I do not like the word deceptive or like sneaky athletic or sneaky fast or whatever, because these guys are like the most talented athletes, period, in the world. And there's nothing deceptive about their talent, but a lot of, you know, Kenny Clark referred to him this way. I think Mike Pettine might've referred to this way as well, but he's deceptively fast for someone his size.
That's the whole key to it, is that he, you see him at the line of scrimmage, you know, like he'll break into the linebackers and, you know, the second level. And then you see these safeties and they come up and they think they have the angle on him. And the next thing you know, he's bouncing it. And he's so quick around the corners that the next thing you know, you miss him. And because you've got to get him head on, you can't make up for a bad angle. You know, some guys can make up for a bad angle. They'll get them around the ankles or they'll get them around the thighs. But this guy, you've got to get your whole body on him or you won't take him down. And that's, to me, that's what really makes him effective.
Derrick Henry has only been held to less than 100 yards this season 5 times. Cleveland, Chicago, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Jacksonville. So the Packers will look to make it 6 on Sunday.
And you know what? I think the common thread in those, I know it is with Cleveland and I think it was with Jacksonville, is that you have to get ahead. You know, Cleveland just jumped all over them. they were ahead, what, 35-3 or something like that. And that takes Derrick Henry out of the game. So the Packers' performance on offense becomes all the more important. You can't have a bunch of three and outs to start the game.
So before we shift over to the defense, as you mentioned, Tom, Ryan Tannehill is playing extremely well. He has 110.4 passer rating, which is fourth in the league. His touchdown to interception ratio is Aaron Rodgers-esque, 31 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. And interestingly enough, I thought this was interesting anyway, he leads the NFL with 5 game-winning drives by a quarterback. It must be an offensive scoring drive in the fourth quarter or in overtime that puts the winning team ahead for the last time. That, according to the according to Pro Football Reference, is how they quantify that. So this is a team that is good. I think most of their close game victories came in the earlier, at least in the first half of the season. But you know, this season they've been pretty strong at rallying late in the game.
Yeah, they are. Once they get their offense rolling, and when they can work off of Henry with their play action game, you know, then they're really dangerous. And they got two home run hitters at wide receiver, A.J. Brown and Corey Davis. Those guys can, you know, they can really get deep on you. And it's not unlike the two guys they just faced in Carolina. It's just that now you have to devote a safety to play in the run the whole time. And Jair Alexander and Kevin King have to realize they're not going to get a whole lot of help for much of the game.
Yeah, both Davis and Brown are approaching 1,000 yards and could certainly do so in these final two games of the season. So something to keep an eye on there. So let's flip it over to the defense now. So the tale of two phases, I suppose, and kind of similar almost to the Packers. However, one could argue that this defense is worse, at least on paper. So this defense is ranked 20th in points, 27th in yards. However, they have one of the best turnover differentials. They're tied for the best turnover differential in the league. They're plus 12. The Packers have only, I believe, given the ball away 9 times this season. So how do they continue to keep their turnovers low against a team that's really good at forcing them?
Well, to me, it's not a huge problem, because even against teams that are good at forcing turnovers, the Packers just don't turn it over very much. And, you know, a good portion of that, of course, is Rodgers. He just doesn't throw interceptions very much. And then their backs don't fumble. And really, that's, if that's the case, then you're in pretty good shape. They may punch one out. It may happen, but there's a lot of yards to be gained against the Titans defense. It is really bad. I mean, they have 14 sacks. That's like, I think the league average is like 31, you know? So they can't get pressure on the quarterback. Their corners, they play tons of man-to-man. And so Davante Adams has to just be fantasizing about a 300-yard game, because they'll play tight man coverage and they won't get any pressure on the quarterback, and boom, you know, they're giving up 250, 300 yards passing almost every game. So I think this is a chance for them. I think where the dilemma comes in is, are you willing to score really fast so that Tennessee gets the ball back right away and then they can come back at you? Or do you want to have sustained drives? I don't know. I think they lure you into wanting to score right away because they're so bad on defense.
The 14 sacks is an NFL low. So Harold Landry leads the team with 4.5 sacks. He lines up, you know, over the left tackle typically. So he'll line up across from David Bakhtiari. And defensive tackle Jeffrey Simmons has 3 sacks this season, and he has 36 pressures. So he'll be a challenge to whoever lines up at guard.
Yeah, and if he plays, right. He's on the injury report, I believe, right? He did not practice.
Correct. He is currently dealing with here we go. He is dealing with a knee injury. He did not participate in Wednesday's practice.
Yeah, we'll see what happens today. they didn't practice Tuesday, so it could just be they're resting him. But yeah, and you know, also one of their corners, Adoree Jackson, is did not participate. So they, you know, you look at their stats, and their safeties lead in tackles, and that's not always a great thing.
Nope, they're 30th. This defense is 30th in the red zone in the NFL. So there's, I mean, that's of the many Achilles heels of this Titans defense. I think that is a glaring one. They've been allowing scores on 70% of their of opponents' trips. So that's, you know, got to capitalize in the red zone. I mean, you always do if you're the Packers offense, but especially against a team that's pretty good, or excuse me, pretty bad in the red zone. So that's the lowdown on the Titans. Also, got to talk about the weather. Sunday forecast is a low of 17 at night, cloudy with a 50% chance of snow showers. Finally, it's football weather, Tom. Winds from the north at 10 to 15 miles per hour. How's that going to impact the game?
Yeah, I, you know, so a person I know who follows the Titans pretty closely has pointed out that they're, you know, they look like they're built for cold weather, but they're full of lots of SEC type guys. And this might be a little bit of a shock for them to play in it. I question that a little bit, but I don't know them as well as he does. And, you know, they're built with Derrick Henry, you would think, to be a really good cold weather team. So that's something I want to, we'll see whether they can handle that. You know, their receivers need to know how to catch in the cold and the wind. And that's all stuff that Packers should do better than they do.
Yes, I will be bundled up, parka, possibly snow pants, possibly scarfs, multiple scarves. I got to walk from the parking lot to the press box, Tom.
Okay.
I don't know if I can make it that long in normal pants or something. Anyway, so weather possibly to play a factor on Sunday night. Finally, we'll cap it off with some not so new news. However, the Packers got 7 Pro Bowlers heading to not Tampa Bay or wherever that, well, where was the Pro Bowl going to be played this year? The Pro Bowl game?
Is it going to be in Orlando maybe? Again?
Somewhere in Florida. For whatever reason, I automatically assume wherever the Super Bowl was being played is also where the Pro Bowl was being played, but I don't think that's true. It's going to be virtual this year. It's a rousing game of Madden because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So keeping the player safe. However, still big honors for the Packers. 7 players, which ties the Chiefs, the Seahawks, and the Ravens at the top of the league for most players selected to the Pro Bowl this season. So players that were selected: outside linebackers Za'Darius Smith, who is no longer snubbed after because he was selected as an alternate last season, and he ultimately got to participate in the Pro Bowl last season. So, wide receiver Devontae Adams, cornerback Jair Alexander, tackle David Bakhtiari, guard Elgton Jenkins, selected as a guard, running back Aaron Jones, and of course, quarterback Aaron Rodgers. The 7 players representing the Packers in the Pro Bowl. Who got snubbed, Tom?
Well, this snub thing is always, to me, just a joke. Because, first of all, they got 7 guys on there. So to say they got snubbed is, anybody got snubbed is kind of disrespectful. But I will say that I do agree that Robert Tonyan should have been a higher consideration than he was. I think he's played better than Evan Engram. Hockenson, people here don't really respect what he did, but he had a really good year, and you know, he doesn't have Aaron Rodgers throwing him the ball, and he was their offense. So I have no problem with that. Sometimes it just takes a year. Sometimes, you know, I would say this. I didn't expect Elgton Jenkins. I didn't expect Jair Alexander to be a starter or Elgton Jenkins to be a starter. So I don't think, you know, Packers fans should be crying about, well, you can do whatever you want, but you know, it's not a travesty, because they recognized who the best players on the Packers team are. And those are the best players. Those are your seven-year best. The only other guy who I thought, you know, who is a great player and didn't make it is Kenny Clark. And he was hurt. So that probably affected him. But I don't have any complaints with who they got. I think they got everybody they should have. And Tanyan, yes, he could have been part of that group. But come back next year and have another year like that, and I guarantee you he'll make it.
For sure. Poor Evan Engram is just getting dragged on social media now. Yeah. The comparisons between him and Robert Tanyan, which, yes, clearly.
Well, if you're a Packers fan and you're mad about it, then vote as much as the New York Giants fans apparently did, because, you know, I'm sure he benefited a ton from that.
Also, not to be forgotten, long snapper Hunter Bradley led the fan vote at his position, and he was ultimately not selected. So I don't see enough outcry for Hunter Bradley on social media. What's going on with that?
Yeah, good point.
What the heck?
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, I kind of thought Anthony Rush deserved it for the ones
right.
he played last week.
All right, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Listen, Pro Bowl, the voting process, whatever, you can argue that it's flawed. However, there are escalators written into certain contracts that, you know, players can make money when they make it into the Pro Bowl, and not just like a little money. It's like a pretty substantial
check. I actually have that up here. I can go through a couple of them. Now, some of these contracts have been updated, but not Rodgers. Za'Darius Smith has a $250,000 escalator. Davante Adams has $250,000. Bakhtiari, this is his old contract, so I don't quite have the new one, but he had a $500,000 Pro Bowl bonus. Corey Linsley missed out on a $250,000. Let's see, who else were we talking about that made it? Oh, Jaire Alexander didn't have one. Rookies don't usually get Pro Bowl. Same with
Aaron Jones,
Tanyan, and guys like that. So Elgton Jenkins didn't have a Pro Bowl. So there's a couple, you know, there's $1 million that the Packers are going to have to take off their salary cap.
That's not nothing in a year, mm-hmm. especially next season, you know, or I should say wanting to roll over as much cap space into next season, a year where the cap is expected to be down $175 million at least. So anyway, that's the Pro Bowl. That's the Titans. That's everything that is going on this week. A little bit of a longer episode. So hopefully you're not bored out of your mind.
How could they be bored out of my Houston Oilers story? I mean, I didn't even tell my Pro Bowl story.
Oh boy. Well, you know, maybe we'll save it for next time.
Sure, it's a really good Pro Bowl story. All right, next time.
Anyway, we're recording this on Thursday. So if you're celebrating Christmas on Friday, Merry Christmas. If you're not, happy Friday, happy Thursday. Thanks so much, everyone, for joining us today. Make sure you're checking out PackersNews.com, JSOnline.com for all of your Packers coverage. Subscribe to our podcast as well. You don't want to miss an episode. Stay in the loop. Thanks for supporting us, everyone, and we will see you next time.